My colleague Alyssa Bamer is here, and we're representing our colleagues Brian Dudgeon and Fred Connell as well. So this is a grant that we got from the CDC to look at the effect of assistive technology on secondary conditions in adolescents with spina bifida. And it's part of three projects that we've done. The first was to look at the onset and course of secondary conditions using a database review of David Shurtleff's data at Children's Hospital in Seattle. And that one we've completed and was published in February in the AJPH. The second one is the one that we'll discuss today, which is to look at the costs and outcomes associated with different kinds of, or different models of healthcare for adolescents with and young adults with spina bifida. And then the third one is the role of assistive devices in promoting health and limiting secondary conditions. And that's a telephone survey that we've completed, and we've completed the data analysis, and we're waiting for me to write it any minute now. And that doesn't work that way on this computer. Oh. So, one of the things that happens in disability policy is that assistive technology is presumed to be really expensive, and it's assumed to be this overwhelming burden on the system to pay for, and that's true for both private insurers and the public sector. And so one of the things I think that CDC was interested in, we were certainly interested in, was is there a way to justify that by looking at the impact of providing assistive technology on secondary conditions. But the second thing was, does it really cost that much? And so we had some data about the prevalence of use of assistive technology from our, or I'll call it AD now, from our initial query into the database at Children's Hospital. But really there's no national database, or statewide or national data on the prevalence of use of AT among people with spina bifida. And there's no data on the costs of it. And we don't really have any idea how to even compare the use of AT from people with spina bifida to other populations. We thought it was reasonable to begin this by looking at the state Medicaid databases, because based on our query into the children's database, it looks like most children who have spina bifida, who have functional limitations secondary to spina bifida, are on Medicaid. So our methods include that we looked at, we extracted data from the Washington State Medicaid program of all claims and eligibility records from January 1st of 2001 through December 31st of 2004. And our participants were all the individuals that we pulled the ICD codes for spina bifida and categorized them into three age groups for the purposes of this analysis: 0 through 15, 16 through 25, and 26 years and older. We're obviously allowing adolescents to spread over a lifetime here. And the analysis was that we looked at the billed services that were categorized into AT subgroups. So we went through all the CPT codes for manual wheelchairs, powered wheelchairs, cushions and seats, accessories and repairs, wheelchair rental, beds and bed accessories, positioning aids, communication and hearing aids, ambulatory aids, bathroom equipment, and orthotics and prosthetics. And the primary outcomes that we looked at were the number of people who used the services, the number of services used, and the total dollars billed and paid. So we found that on an average year, there were 848 enrollees with the diagnosis of spina bifida, that they sorted into 323 from the 0 to 15 years, 215 from the 60 to 25 year, and 341 from the 26-year-old on up group. They don't sum to 848 because individual could age in or out of a group in any particular year of analysis. And so there were 10.9 average months of eligibility per user per year. And of those, 32.6% of the enrollees had a type, some type of AT claim that year. So you can see that, as you'd expect, that largest number of claims were for orthotics and prosthetics, followed by wheelchair, other users, power chairs, manual chairs, beds, wheelchair cushions, positioning aids, bathing aids, communication, hearing was the lowest, ambulatory aids, and wheelchair rental. We assume that wheelchair rental, we're not real sure what that represents. Oh, so orthotics and, well, so we've already reviewed that. So most of the was spent overall on orthotics and prosthetics, followed by wheelchair, other charges, and power wheelchairs. Per user, as you'd expect, power chairs were most expensive, followed by manual chairs. And the average cost per of AT per spine bifida enrollee, whether or not they used AT, was $512. So a total of $432,000 was paid annually for the population, or 3.23% of all dollars paid for Medicaid for this group. So the per user costs were lower for 16 and 25 to 25 year olds than it was for 0 to 15 year old and 25 plus year old respectively. Although it was about the same for the percentage of all AT in each age group. And we're not really sure how to interpret this. We know that as kids age, they move up the spectrum of using more and more assisted mobility. So they start out, often start out walking and move to orthotics and then move to assisted mobility devices and then move to chairs as they get older. And the demands increase and their bodies change. So our conclusions were that only a third of the enrollees used AT at any one, or charged AT against Medicaid during any one year. And as a percentage of the overall Medicaid costs, the cost of AT is only 3 to 4%. And it may be an underestimate since most of the children are, we know from our analysis, are dual eligible for Medicare, which is nominally the first payer, and families may use commercial insurance. And Medicaid may contract with HMOs, or families may pay out of pocket. Although in our experience, Medicaid often ends up picking the lion's share of assistive technology up. The preliminary analysis, when we excluded those with other insurance, found that the per-user AT costs increased by 30 to 40%, whereas the overall medical costs increased half that much. So, are the AT needs adequately covered? There's no way to really, we don't really know. And what we do know, and we've found this in the survey that we're working on the data now, is that a lot of because a lot of the disabilities that adolescents with spina bifida confront as they transition out of high school into community living and employment are related to learning difficulties and difficulties with executive function and initiating activity, interfere with their ability to participate more fully. And there's a lot of assistive technology that we know from our clinical experience might provide useful compensatory tools. And there's no way to track that in this data, although we do know from our survey that most of our respondents were not using that technology.